Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to Beyond the Game. My name is Gregan, and today I'm chatting with G Nelly, known for their content creation in gaming and lifestyle.
I got into wanting to do like video editing and creating and stuff like that because I used to have horses and I used to film me and my horses and then edit it together. Gregan told me earlier, he was like, I've done some research on you, Georgina. And I was like, oh no, have you found the horse videos? Oh my God.
I haven't found the horse videos, but it was that was like 2008, right?
Oh, long time ago. Yeah. I think there might be a 2005 one.
Yeah, so after Ireland, worked in retail for a bit,
yes.
But then there was a day that changed everything.
Right over there.
You went to a party quite near here.
Yes.
Firstly, it was a YouTuber party, right?
Yeah, it was a housewarming party, I believe.
How important do you think that day was for you? Or do you think you'd have found a way to get into it otherwise?
I don't know. Like, editors weren't a thing. The boys didn't tell anyone it was me that edited for them. It was a very secretive thing to have an editor. Because YouTube back then was so personal still, you know? Like, whereas now it's normal to have an editor. In fact, it's silly for you not to have an editor for YouTube.
Do you enjoy being the side character rather than the main character in content?
Yeah, I feel like for sure side character. It's something I've come way more to terms with recently as well. Because I worked so behind the scenes for so long, I love helping people with content.
Being grateful for things is massive, and you saying that's going to make me go away and be more grateful again.
You just have to get into like the remembering part, you know, because you can get so consumed on what's ever happening in your life. But yeah, if you take a second to like sit back and just be like, okay, I'm grateful for this and that and whatever, and yeah, it's just a nice like way to start the day.
Make sure to follow for future episodes and let us know who you want to hear from next. I hope you enjoy this conversation as we get to know G beyond the game. You've not been on a podcast, you just told me, in about two years. So
I think it might be longer than... It was Blue Hair G that was
Blue
on the podcast,
G.
Yeah.
And you've evolved.
I have.
Big grown-up G now.
I was going to say, I don't know if it's for the best or for the worst, but more Blue Hair G.
Well, welcome, and I appreciate you coming on, and I want to talk about your journey, everything that led you to be where you are now, catch up on what's going on right now in your life, and then get to know you beyond the game.
Okay.
So first of all, let's start at the beginning with a journey.
You're
a content creator. You do all sorts of different bits, gaming, lifestyle stuff. Mm-hmm. You started out making your own content as an individual before you even knew what you wanted to do, before you even studied media.
Yeah.
What was your thought process when you were first starting making content?
What? I thought you were going to bring up something, Gwen, and I was like, how much research have you done, Gregan? So I got into wanting to do like video editing and creating and stuff like that because I used to have horses. And I used to film me and my horses and then edit it together. So I thought, because Greg had told me earlier, he was like, I've done some research on you, Georgina. And I was like, oh no, have you found the horse videos? Oh my God.
I haven't found the horse videos, but it was that was like 2008, right?
Oh, long time ago. Yeah. I think there might be a 2005 one that's out there. But yeah, that's how I discovered, like, I really loved creating these little, like, videos, even though it was, like, Windows Movie Maker, like, awful. But I went to college and I studied for video editing, creative media. And that's, like, what I, like, shined in, was what my college would say. They'd always ask me to, like, edit the college, like, videos. But I was, like, so academically, I was so academically.
Got it. Nailed it.
Was that it?
Well, you nailed it.
Stupid. So I had, like, no GCSEs. I wasn't even meant to get into college because I was meant to have a maths GCSE, and I took it four times in school. And then I'd done my interview at college and they liked me so much that they were like, okay, you can retake your maths GCSE in college and we'll let you in. Retook it, I think, maybe three or four times in college. And they were like, yeah, go on, Georgina. Just pretend you have one, okay? So yeah, I done well in college doing editing. And then I just kind of worked. Like, I worked at Ralph Lauren for a while. Served Mr. Bean.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm trying to work out with the school stuff. Let's go back to that a bit. Was your academicaliness not there because of the school system?
No, I was very dyslexic, like super. Like, I had very, very severe learning difficulties, like mainly dyslexia, but also, like, I don't know any other things, but I got diagnosed with dyslexia as very young. And funny wish, actually, because I'm going to see Elton John tonight. But they made me wear little blue tinted glasses and everyone used to sing Elton John songs down the corridor to me. Not in a nice way.
No.
In a mean way.
I mean, it's amazing music, but not when it's taking the piss out of your glasses.
Yeah, literally. And yeah, my school really accommodated for me. Like, they would print out stuff on yellow pieces of paper. I used to have a blue ruler that I'd put over words. I don't know. I still don't understand what the blue thing is, but, you know, apparently it helped. They would print sheets. So because I'd struggle to read, they would print out my, like, papers like this big. So I used to sit in class with this, like, massive paper. So it was bigger. Huge bit of paper, yeah.
So they just made the font bigger for you.
They just made it bigger so I could read it easier. And I had, like, a learning difficulties teacher that would sit with me. And they took me out of languages to do special, like, classes, like learning classes. And I really loved languages, and my mum went into school. If my mum comes back, I'll bring her in. But my mum went into school absolutely furious, like, take her out of a class that she doesn't like. Like, why are you taking her out of languages? So I never got to learn a language properly, which sucked. But yeah, they were really accommodating. They even in exams let me read out loud.
Oh, wow.
So, like,
were you in a separate room?
Nope. I was fully in the exam hall, and I used to, and at school, okay, I wasn't the most well behaved girl. I wasn't badly behaved. I was just very loud. Like, I was friends with everyone in school. Like,
nothing's changed then.
Everyone. Yeah, I know. I know, literally. I just like, I'm a very positive person, and I like to, you know, just be happy. And yeah, I was friends with everyone in school, so, like, every single group. But that means in classes I was just so, like, active, you know, like, running around everywhere and jumping around and whatever. So yeah, in the exam halls I used to take the absolute piss, and I would sit there like, and one time, actually, there was a story I told on stream once, and it done really well. I was in my maths exam, and I rolled up my paper, like, my math paper, because I couldn't do it, and I was, like, doing this, like, everyone, and I got proper disqualified. Like, they brought my mum in and everything, and they was like, Georgina's being done for cheating. And I was like, I was just pretending to be a pirate.
I have a similar story to that, and mine, I think, sums up my character like your one sums up yours. Yeah. So when I was in year two, finished my maths sats early. And you know when you're sat there and they say, just sit there patiently and wait for everyone to be done.
Yeah.
I got so bored that I started seeing what other people were doing.
Oh, no.
And I told a friend of mine afterwards that they got a question wrong.
Oh.
I was like, oh, by the way, you got that question wrong.
Yeah, that does really explain.
And then they told me off, they're like, you're not allowed to do that. I was like, I was done. I was bored.
He was like, what else am I going to look at? But like, ceiling?
Yeah,
so I know.
So that's the difference between you and me.
Uh-huh.
When you're bored in an exam.
Yeah, 100%, literally.
But so you went off, you did the BTEC in media, because you really wanted to do this editing thing, and you found a job, you went to Ireland.
Oh, yeah.
What was Ireland like?
So my uncle, big up Think House Media, my uncle, well, not my uncle, he's my mum's cousin, but I call him uncle, had a media company in Ireland. So whenever I saw him, we'd chat all the time about it. And he was the one that told me not to go to university. He was like, don't do it. It's not going to help you. And he offered me a placement after I left college in Dublin. So I flew out there and worked editing there. I'd done some cool campaigns. Like I edited a Heineken campaign. I edited a Movember campaign. And like I learned so much from there. But the thing is, the editing world in like film, television, adverts, you know, like mainstream media, compared to when I started editing in YouTube world, different worlds, like complete different worlds. But yeah, in Dublin, I didn't like going outside and didn't make many friends and just sat in the house, which was lovely because I was there with my family. But work-wise, I was just like going into the office to like sit, and it just wasn't for me. So I came home.
So it wasn't the right environment. You learned a lot there, but it wasn't the right environment for you to flourish.
Exactly, It probably actually helped my mindset to be like, oh, maybe this style of editing is not what I want to go into. Because I wanted to go to film and television school in Beaconsfield University and like study there for editing. But yeah, I think that might have like been a really good place for me to have been like, oh, actually, I don't really like this.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing, is it? If you have a bad job, you learn that that's not the type of job you want to do. So it's important to have those moments and they're formative jobs for the future.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, exactly. I'm so glad I done like work in like retail and all stuff like that, because I feel like it builds you as a person so much.
Yeah. So after Ireland, worked in retail for a bit, but then there was a day that changed everything.
Oh right over there.
You went to a party quite near here.
Yes.
Firstly, it was a YouTuber party, right?
Yeah, it was a housewarming party, I believe.
Who invited you? How did you get into this? Like, what's the first step into getting into this party?
I was invited by a boy that I liked. And yeah, I think I went with my friend Gigi, or I went by myself. I can't remember what it was exactly. But yeah, I went to this party. I already met the boy before. So I went there, and then there was a few of the boys from the Sidemen there, I think Toby, JJ and Ethan. And I knew of them, but I didn't keep up with YouTube at all. And yeah, we were like talking, like everyone was just like talking on the sofa, and Toby was like, oh, like I'm really struggling with like editing and like doing this and this. And I was like, I can edit. And he was like, oh, okay. Like, not taking me seriously.
I can edit.
And I was like, no, seriously. Like, I studied at a college and like this and that. And I think I showed him like some of my work I'd done. I can't remember. This is 2016 or 15. Like, long time ago, okay. My memory's not very good, so I'll try my hardest. And he was like, do you want a trial? And I was like, okay. Yeah, the next day, I think it was the next day. Again, don't hold my word for it. But I went in and I'd done some editing trials for him. And he was like, yeah, I'll have you. Quit my job that day. Never went back into work. And I worked at Ralph Lauren. And you're meant to hand in a notice and this and that and everything. But they treated me so badly there. I worked there for, love that Ralph Lauren. You know, big up Ralph Lauren. I'm sure it wasn't his issue. But yeah, it was just minimum pay. They promised rises, long hours, you know, like, and I didn't like progress there. I think I got to the highest place I could get to there. There wasn't anything else for me to do. And it taught me so much working there. But yeah, I was just like, I'm not even going to do the next month there. I think it's more beneficial for me to put all of my time into this, which probably isn't the best because I probably left them short staffed. Now I think about it, I feel very guilty, but you know.
I'm sure they'd have found a way.
Yeah. And it was only me and this other boy that worked on Ralph Lauren, and he was so supportive of me. He was like, don't worry, like I'll cover you and like everything. Oh. And so it was really nice. And yeah, So it just happened very, very quickly, super quickly.
We were talking before we start the podcast about how important it is to meet the right people at the right time. Mm-hmm. And how if you've got something, so in your case, you had editing down. And at that time on YouTube, the level of editing that was expected of editors wasn't as high as it's getting now.
No, not at all.
So
yeah,
you were
probably
overqualified for what they were asking.
Yeah.
And consequently, that's why you nailed the job straight away and got involved. How important do you think that day was for you? Or do you think you'd have found a way to get into it otherwise?
I don't know. Like, I never... So the thing... When I started editing, editors weren't a thing. Like, the boys didn't tell anyone it was me that edited for them. It was a very secretive thing to have an editor, because YouTube back then was so personal still, you know? Like, whereas now it's normal to have an editor. In fact, it's silly for you not to have an editor for YouTube, because it's a business. But back then it was so, so secretive. Wait, I forgot the question. What was the question?
Do you think you'd have found your way into editing in the YouTube space otherwise?
So, I don't know, because, yeah, that's what I was trying to say, is because I didn't know editing was a thing for YouTube. And I don't think even YouTubers thought of bringing on editors. Like, Toby was the one that hired me. So thank you, Toby, for believing in me. But yeah, so he started it. Like, I'm trying to think if any of the other boys even had an editor when Toby hired me. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I could see it happening, because back then especially I was a super, super, super social person. So I could see, like, me talking to people and, like, maybe being bored at my job. I was probably looking a bit more for something. But yeah, I don't know. I think I would have found a way, but I don't know how I would have.
Yeah, I guess with enough meeting of people, you know, making friends with people through friendship, you'd eventually found someone who said, oh, I know someone who can edit.
Exactly, right? Uh-huh. It's all like conversation and, you know, like, that's why I think it's so important for people to have, like, these conversations with new people. And I'm trying to get better at it, because from lockdown, I hardly go out anymore. But when I think about, like, back then when I met the boys, like, that's all it took, was literally like going to his house party and talking to this person, and it can just turn into like such a story, you know. Yeah. So I'm trying to get better at doing that again now,
because you can never know when those moments are
gonna
be.
Uh-huh.
Like, I look back on all the moments that led me to the next big thing. It's always one conversation that you can put it down to, but you don't remember the thousands of other conversations you have that could have led to something.
There's a funny story from that is, I was in LA the other day and there was a girl that had a really sick outfit on, and I love giving people compliments. But she was on the phone and I was like, oh, I don't want to disrupt her, you know. So when she got off the phone, I was like, okay, I'm going to go tell her I like her outfit. And I went up to her and I was like, oh, I just want to tell you I really like your outfit. She was like, oh, no way, thank you. She was like, oh, you're British, what are you doing in LA? And I was like, oh, I'm here for a gaming convention. She was like, oh, my client loves like video games. I was like, oh, who's your client? And she was like, oh, Offset. And I was like, what? She was like, can I show him your Instagram? And I was like, yeah,
sure.
And that was so weird. I was like, okay, sure. I'm sure Offset's going to be so interested in my Instagram. But it's just like the smallest conversation, because now I follow her, she follows me. So like, if she ever comes to the UK or when I go out to LA, like, that is, it's like the littlest thing can like lead on to so much, you know? But you never know what it could be.
You're here because we met through Guild, where you're a creator there. I was the Rocket League coach. We also played Among Us together as well.
We did. Good times.
Yeah, that was a very weird time. That was the ultimate interaction between so many different communities. So we all kind of met each other through that. And I remember your party. We won't talk about
the
jar of the party, but I remember it being YouTubers,
yes,
Guild people and Minecraft people.
Yeah.
And it was like you fused them all together, and your family as well. Uh-huh. Like G family members.
Yeah.
I think your cousin was there
my cousins, yeah.
And it was like putting them all in the same room and going, have fun.
Yeah.
Meet new people.
So I know you said you don't want to talk about the drama of it, but I'm happy to talk about it. But the thing that made me so, because obviously if you guys don't know about it, I got a lot of backlash. A lot. Like, putting things into like actual real, like, I don't know, to explain it. I think I woke up with maybe 5,000 mentions and like Keemstar covering it, all this, all that. It was awful. But one of the things that people would say is like, oh, like, she's not even like discreet about being a clout chaser. Like, She's like, she doesn't even know these people. And that's the that was a big thing people were saying. And I think someone out there said that there was like 500 people there. There were 60. Mm-hmm. I counted my guest list.
There was so much space there as Yeah. You could have had so many more people if you wanted.
But the thing that really disappointed me about seeing these fans of a certain community be like, discredit me and being like, oh, she's a clout chaser, is not realizing I've been in this industry for 6 years. Mm-hmm. And I've met so many people, like they'd be like, how does she know CPK? I met CPK 5 years ago at like an Insomnia.
And oh, CPK like, was there?
Yeah.
I didn't meet him then, but yeah. You know, now yeah. He's been on the podcast like, oh. And everything.
Yeah, I had my Henley, my college friends there. I had my cousins there. I had my my best friends from home there. And then people I've met throughout the industry, like everyone there, I knew very, very well. I'm not the kind of person that would ever invite someone I don't know. Mm. So I was like, God damn it, guys. Can you just have some respect for me? Like, I've been here for a while.
Birthday,
I've been here longer than you probably
all your
even.
Friends.
Yeah, I know, right? Oh, man. So yeah. Sad.
It was tough because it was when... So lockdown was different in every different country. Mm-hmm. And in the UK, it was lifting to a point where you could have a party with...
Yes.
I think it was infinite amount of people, right? Yeah, like yeah. It was literally like...
Lockdown was, yeah.
It was pretty much gone.
I think the thing was to wear masks on trains and stuff, mm-hmm. but yeah, like
and I... test beforehand if you can.
Yeah.
Don't go with symptoms.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, and at that time, I think in America, it was quite different. That mm-hmm. was the big group of people who were against it.
It was Americans, yeah.
And so you were doing everything completely fine, but you were one of the first people in the UK to put a party on mm-hmm. just because of the timing of your birthday.
Yeah.
I mean... Unlucky timing of the birthday. Because I think like 2-3 weeks later, there was another birthday and there was no problem with it. Everyone was like, oh, this is normal now.
Yeah, literally. I know. I think I was just the,
First one.
The first one, unfortunately. Yeah.
I mean, with that kind of thing, you know, you're in the public eye. Even someone who's been behind the scenes mm-hmm. and seen some of the biggest creators in the space from that side. And then you then decide to take that leap to go into the public eye.
Yeah. After,
it was about like 4 years of editing, right? Mm-hmm. What's been the biggest learning for you from going into that creator space where you're the center of attention for a lot of people?
Definitely difficult, like super difficult. But I think the thing is to build your own kind of community and stuff, because I was so blessed, like, because obviously I worked, so I first worked for Toby, I then worked for Simon, and then worked for Will, mm-hmm. and they were so supportive of me, like, even like all like so many people were supportive of me, to the point of where like Will would sometimes be like, oh, let's film a video together, like, to help this, or do you want me on a stream to do this? Like, they were always there to, you know, like, be like, oh, we can help you do this because you've helped us for so long. But with stuff like that, I never wanted to be like, you know, I wanted to make my own journey and my own like name for myself. So I think it's really important to do that and like just be like super independent with it, because mm-hmm. that's what will make it like long lasting, you know, because they're busy boys. Like, I never wanted them to feel like they had to. Like, because imagine if I had like Will on every stream and then one day I didn't have him on stream, my numbers would be low. And in a normal human's mindset, once that something drops, you just automatically think like, oh, okay, I need him back, you know? So I think that was really important for me to do, was to not super connect myself to them, even though like I genuinely would not be here without them and I owe them like so much to me. But I'd say, yeah, to new people, like, it is so, like we were speaking earlier, it's so important to network and, you know, do collaborations, because that is how you grow and that is how a lot of people start. But you also have to focus on your own content and be like creative and come up with new ideas, and also to just do what you love. Like, I feel like so many of us streamers have really struggled, like, in the last like year, because there's no games that everyone really loves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's tricky. It's definitely tricky.
Yeah, so your main content was streaming and mm-hmm. gaming content. In particular, during lockdown, that's where you started to stream a lot more.
Yeah.
And you've done quite a lot of Minecraft as well.
Yeah.
And recently got involved in the MCC.
Yeah.
So you've done a whole range of games. You started as a variety streamer. You now got more of a Minecraft focus with MCC. That's where you're doing your big events every month or so. What's been that process of going through the different games? Like, have you consciously gone through an era where you go, right, I must focus on this game right now? Or do you consciously try and mix it up to make sure you don't get locked to a certain game?
Yeah, I mean, it's so tricky to say now because I've like fully fallen out of love with gaming, and it's like so sad. I'm waiting for the game to like bring me back. But when I first started streaming, I'd done whatever I wanted to do. If I wanted to stream like a game no one knew about, or like I like loved Animal Crossing, I streamed Overwatch for 2 years to like 5 viewers or 10 viewers with Talia on my Xbox. No one wants to watch that, but I love playing it, so I was like, I don't care. And then when it got to, you know, like lockdown, and Among Us, I loved playing Among Us, but I was very like, this is where I need to put my focus in. Like, I'm not going to miss out playing Among Us to play a game that I'm going to enjoy. And maybe that would, if I did do that, it would have made me love gaming now, you know. But you know, you never know what can happen. But yeah, I think now I'm someone that can't like fake stuff on stream. Like, so if I was to play a game that's doing well, I can't just sit there and play a game. Like, I can't do it. I wish I could, because I'm sure it would mean I'd still be a streamer right now. But yeah, like, I think right now for me is to just, if I find a game that I like, I will stream it. But yeah, I don't know. It's rough right now in the gaming world.
I mean, one of the questions we ask all of our guests, I guess we'll get out of the way now while we're talking about gaming, is top 5 games of all time.
Okay.
Now, there's not much right now, but I'm sure you can look back on all those games. And some people take this as the ones that have influenced their career the most. Some will look at it as their favorite experiences. The only rule is if you choose something part of a series, you have to choose the one game from it.
Okay.
Or multiple if you want to include multiple.
All right. So if I'm starting from the back to the top, I can't remember the exact name from it, but the one game I would play all the time at home, and it has such a special place in my heart, is Rugrats. Did you ever play that?
I didn't. I've seen it though.
It was so good. It was on, what was it? Maybe PlayStation 2? Maybe. I can't remember. But yeah, Rugrats would have to be in my like lifetime top 5, because that's the game that like really was like made me love video games. Is Habbo Hotel counted as a game?
You can put Habbo Hotel in there.
That was my shit. Can I swear?
Yeah, you can swear.
That was my shit. Like,
this is one of my favorite things of this podcast. People ask, can they swear after they swear?
Yeah, I know. Like,
yeah,
sorry.
Sure, go ahead.
I can't explain to you how many hours I have in that game. Like,
How did you play it? Like, what kind of a Habbo Hotel player were you?
Well, I was a DJ.
Okay.
Yeah, so that means I was kind of well known on there, you know. But basically, Habbo Hotel had like outsources of radio stations. So we'd use a podcaster called Sam, and we would like DJ. So I was DJ Gigi. And yeah, so it means
how old were you when you were doing this?
Oh God, it would have been from like the ages of maybe like 11 to 14. And then obviously I got like teenager and I was like, that's cringe. And then I got back into it when I was 16, like super secretively.
That's amazing.
To like maybe 17 or 18. I was definitely in college playing it still. But yeah, Habbo Hotel, oh my God, it has such a like,
Were you rich in it? Did you have?
I wasn't rich in it. Like I was very like known on how, like you'd have like celebrities, you know, that would be the DJs. So I was like there at one point. I had peaks in my Habbo Hotel DJ career.
DJ Gigi.
DJ Gigi, yeah. But there was this, sorry, it's going on a ramble right
no,
now.
Go
but
ahead.
I
this
can
is speak great.
About Habbo Hotel all
this
day.
Is great.
There was this one DJ, because all the DJs would be friends, called I shouldn't say his name. But anyway, there was this one DJ that was part of Habbo Hotel. And we would like Skype every night. All the DJs would Skype together and we'd become really good friends. And then maybe like 4 years after I finished playing Habbo Hotel, I was at a rave and I was like, I really recognize that boy over there. And I was thinking in my head, because it was at a rave, it was like really dark. And I was like, that guy looks like a Habbo Hotel DJ I used to DJ with. And I like walked past him and I was like, DJ, his name, and he was like, G? And I was like, oh my God.
That's
and
mad.
He was like, don't mention Habbo Hotel in front of anyone right now. I was like, I won't.
So that was on the slide.
It was so cool. It was so cool. But yeah, so Habbo Hotel would have to be in my top, but I don't think it's classed as a game.
No, it's definitely a game.
Okay, all right. Okay, that's good then. Animal Crossing on the DS.
Ooh.
On the DS. That was...
Wildwoods, was it the DS one, I think?
Wildwoods was the very first one. The DS is in like the square DS. I can't remember what one that was called.
So there's Animal Crossing. The first one was just called Animal Crossing, I think.
Oh, maybe it is then.
I don't know, because that was on the GameCube.
Yeah.
Because I played all of them up until 3DS.
The GameCube one was wild.
Yeah, I went back and played GameCube one after playing the DS one.
Wild.
Yeah, what a game that was for its time.
Uh-huh.
And then it didn't blow up until the DS, I don't think, because people wanted that mobile.
Yeah. I never played on the GameCube, but I've seen videos on it. Mm. But the DS one, I had two cartridges, so I'd have two villagers that I'd swap between. I still have them all at home.
Mm-hmm. All weeds everywhere now, though.
Yeah, oh for sure. Uh-huh, I'd get proper told off. Mm-hmm. So Animal Crossing. What am I on? Three.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna have to say Among Us because it's my whole career, you know.
It was a great game.
It was a great, great game. Like
bringing people together.
It did. It was just so easy as well. Like we'd play it for like 8 hours and it'd be fine. Mm. So much drama as well. But and then my first game would be Overwatch.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I thought it might be.
Yeah. That was like my grind. I grinded for my gold. Mm. in competitive, and I was very proud of it. But yeah, it'd be Overwatch. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that'd be my top five.
So with that top five, I love the versatility of it. There's a mm-hmm. whole range of different games there. I think one thing I noticed with them is there's a lot of, except for Rugrats, there's a lot of community vibe with them, like playing with people, which kind of sums you up as a person.
Yeah, I was gonna say I love playing games with people.
I feel like you bounce off the energy of other people. Like you used to play, was it Dead by Daylight a lot as well?
Oh, you should have put Dead by Daylight in there. I messed up. And Osu, I forgot Osu as well.
Yeah, you're a bit of an Osu grinder.
I love Osu. Osu's one game I can non-stop play, but I don't play it on stream because it did a lot, you know, you can't look at chat and stuff.
Yeah, it's not a great stream game. I think all of the sweaty games are hard to stream just because you can't read chat when you're fully focused. And if you do,
for sure.
Your gameplay goes down, then you get frustrated.
Exactly, uh-huh. And I dribble when I play it. No word of a lie, I dribble.
Is that why when you do Osu, you do it with the potato thing?
Uh-huh, that's exactly why. I don't want people seeing me dribbling.
Okay. Well, now I know that.
Yeah, now you're going to be like, proper watching, yeah.
Oh, well, so they can have honorable mentions.
Yeah, they can, yeah.
There we go.
I mean, yeah.
So the other question we ask everyone around gaming is what their greatest ever gaming achievement is.
Wow.
So what particular thing stands out?
That's a big question.
Mm.
Maybe Streamer of the Year 2017.
That is a great achievement,
right? Yeah. Do you want to know what makes it even better?
Who'd
I was at a festival. What was you gonna say?
Who'd you beat?
Yeah. No. Well, I was at a festival, Boomtown, and I travelled. I woke up on the Saturday morning of Boomtown at like 5 a.m. Travelled 5 hours to London XL to go to this event, and then went back to Boomtown that night as the winner.
What a legend.
So I had like a little crown that a fan gave me that I wore all night at Boomtown. It was just cool. Like, I don't know, it's just funny.
Party don't stop for nothing.
Yeah, literally. That's cool.
Is there anything in-game you can think of? Because sometimes when people external stuff, like a career achievement, or if they're an esports player, something they won.
Yeah.
It's quite fun to hear in-game achievements. Is there anything you remember?
My memory is so bad. I don't know.
Surely there's an Osu thing you've... Because you're pretty good at Osu as well.
Yeah, I'm okay. I mean, I'm not. I can do 4-star maps. Like, if you look at actual Osu players,
But that's with every game though now, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's always someone out there who's played nothing but that game for 10 years.
True, that is very true. But yeah, I'm decent at Osu. I don't know. Trying to think of like something cool, but I can't think of anything cool.
Mm. I mean, I feel like there's gonna be a lot of memories, right? Like Among Us memories, Overwatch memories, all those kind of things that aren't really achievements, but the way you engage with gaming is to have those fun times.
Yeah,
fun
oh my God, for sure. Yeah. I was going to say, Habbo Hotel reached out to me once and they sent me an NFT, which obviously now isn't great, but it was kind of cool because it was only for, like, they only sent them out to celebrities.
Celebrities, yeah. Habbo celebrities.
They were like, damn, DJ DG, you know, we better send it out to her. No, they didn't know DJ DG, but that was cool because obviously I loved Habbo as a kid so much. I was like,
it felt special
awesome.
At the time. Super NFTs special. Were well cool as well.
Mm-hmm, right, yeah, I know. But and I had a chicken. I'm not gonna say that. You can cut this out. But basically, I like to be like to people, you want to see my cock? And then I show them my Habbo NFT because it's a cockerel.
I mean, that's fine.
Have I not showed you my cock before?
No.
Oh. I'll show
I mean,
you
show
later.
Me the cock after.
Yeah. Yeah, I will, don't worry. My mum walks through right now. She's like, wait, do you know what podcast are you filming?
That's a classic one though, isn't it? Like the, hey, you want me to show you something?
Yeah,
show
I liked
you my
it.
Pussy.
So they...
and then they have a cat.
Please. Yeah, no, I get you. Yeah. I liked it. So thank you, Habbo, for giving me the meme that I've used so many times. I appreciate it.
So your greatest
it.
Game achievement is the cock.
Is my cock, yeah, my Habbo cock. It is.
Well, we'll go back to your journey then. Okay. So you become a full-time content creator. You've been doing gaming content. And I think one thing that I want to ask you about, and this is purely from something I've come to terms with recently, and I'm interested to hear your point of view. So streaming for me, I find very stressful.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the idea of streaming, but I love being on stream.
Mm-hmm.
So I love being in other, like I play a lot of Valorant with Talia, for example, and I love being entertaining and all that
you.
Kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Same thing as well, I love collaborating with other people, I love being other people's content, I love going on other podcasts, etc. And I love working for companies, I love doing mm-hmm. activations, all that kind of stuff. But for some weird reason, whenever I'm doing it myself, except for this, it's like because it's collaborative. But yeah, the whole point I'm trying to get at is do you enjoy being the side character rather than the main character in content?
Yeah, I feel like for sure side character. It's something I've come way more to terms with recently as well because I worked so behind the scene for so long. I love helping people with content. But when it comes to myself, I just can't stand it. Like I have so many good video ideas and like, you know, like stream ideas and everything. But I just hate executing them myself. But when it comes to other people, I love it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, maybe that's something I need to realize more. And I should start working for YouTubers again, which I have been doing here and there, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue with that is obviously I've been self-employed now for so long, like I don't really want to be like, you know, where's this and where's this. I just like helping.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for sure, like it definitely doesn't come natural to me, like hence why I haven't streamed in a long time, because again, like you said, I love streaming, and as soon as I start streaming, it's great. But it's now such a thing in my head of where it's like, I have to perform knit like this and do this, and I don't want to like stream and it be a bad stream because I haven't streamed for so long. So I want to make sure it's a good stream. But yeah, I think one thing I learned when I was younger is like I can't remember the saying, but it's something like, you either there's a way to say it cool, but it's either you like to work for people or you like people working for you.
I know the saying you mean. It's like
you
either lead or get led.
Yeah,
something like that.
And I love like not being like the person to have other people do stuff. I love helping other people. But yeah, it doesn't help much when I'm now, you know, just me.
I guess that sort of translated into working with brands. And I feel like you're quite good at working with brands because you go above and beyond for people. I saw that when you were at Guild, you were willing to go above and beyond for people. Recently, you've been working quite a lot with Samsung.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done some amazing things with you. You've done some amazing things for them. Why do you think brands keep coming back to G to get G involved
in stuff? I don't know. Do you know what's funny? When I had blue hair... I used to stick out a lot to brands because obviously when they look at a sheet of things, so I used to get a lot of brand deals when I had blue hair. And when I dyed my hair, my manager was like, Georgina, why'd you do that? Like, your blue hair is such a iconic thing for you. Like, obviously my manager didn't say this, but technically, if you take something like that away, it could mean, you know, you lose a lot of work. But I haven't. I've been doing a lot of cool stuff. I don't know. I think it's because I'm quite talkative. I don't know. It's really hard. Like with Samsung, because I'm a Samsung ambassador. Hashtag Team Galaxy. Whenever I go to the events and stuff, I feel like I take it quite like, you know, but it's like passionately in a way. Like I love to like give them feedback and like tell them what they could do better, or like I tell them my ideas, I take on their ideas. So I think maybe they like how like vocal I am about stuff. I don't know, I guess
you don't just turn up and go, what does it say in my contract?
Yeah, exactly. I like collaborating and like making sure like it's the best for my platform, because that's something brands struggle with a lot, is, you know, making sure that it will work for a specific content creator's platform. They'll just send you a brief and, you know, it just doesn't work. So maybe that's why. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of similar with collaborations, where people would happily have you as a third or fourth person in a video because you're going to bring energy, you're going to bring a different angle.
So I guess
there's an element of that where some people might struggle with that side of things, and having you involved will... we'll make that easier.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough because it's nice to be self-aware of what you're good for, but then equally, sometimes it's nice just to be blissfully ignorant to your own greatness and just carry on and keep enjoying it.
Yeah, so with Samsung, Samsung have like a whole like Team Galaxy all around the world. So it's really cool at the Samsung events because they bring all the people from around the world. But I would go to all these events, and there'd be like 2 Italian gamers, 4 Indian gamers, 2 gamers from Dubai. Like everyone would have friends and I would just always be there by myself. And I'd be like, Samsung, why have I got no mates? But they were like, we can't find anyone that's as good as you. Aww. And I was like, okay, guys, come on now, stop it. But I was like, there has to be someone, man. Like, because it's really awkward when I go to the event because everyone's in their little... pairs and I'm just sat there by myself, like, okay, my Samsung manager's come and sit with me and cheer me on. But I don't know, apparently I'm great according to Samsung.
I mean, they need to find someone equally as great. I guess they can't just get anyone in, because then you'll make them look bad.
Did you
meet Samsung through Guild when you were at Guild then?
Yeah, I think so. Like, so so they were partnered with Guild, and then when I left Guild, they asked me to like be a part of this thing called Samsung House, which was like really scary as for starters, like going in a house for 4 days or 5 days, I think, with 4 or 5 other content creators, and then everything was Samsung. So it was like Samsung TV, Samsung projector, Samsung oven, Samsung fridge, Samsung phone, Samsung this, Samsung that, all Samsung. And yeah, I done that, and then I done like a few other jobs here and there for them, and then they was like, would you like to be an ambassador? And I said, hell yeah, I would, Samsung. And here we are.
Yeah, I guess that's the point of, if you do a good job, things will come back and reward you.
Yeah.
And that's sort of how you've bounced your way through the content creator space, is you work good for someone, and then you get a new creator you edit for, and then you collaborate with someone, everyone's like, oh gee, it was really fun to collaborate with.
Yeah.
And then you get a new opportunity. Well,
I think now that I think about it, with the way that you've worded it, maybe brands like working with me because I used to work for YouTubers. So I used to be kind of a, you know, the kind of like what brands do is like come up with the ideas, put it together. So maybe that's why, because I have that knowledge side of it.
Maybe
I go in there and I'm like, oh, things should be filmed like this and edited like this. So I don't know, maybe that's why.
Yeah, well, who knows what it is, but whatever it is.
We should get Samsung on it.
Yeah, get Samsung to come tell you. Imagine you just walk in next time and go, so I asked this question, I don't know the answer to it. Could you let me know, why do you keep getting me?
Yeah, I know. I actually would. I'd love to know their answer.
Yeah, maybe they'll be like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. You're just there.
Yeah, you're great. We just keep getting you back.
Yeah.
Oh, so then with the Samsung thing, there was also quite a big moment recently where you featured on a billboard.
Yeah, so cool.
How did that feel when you saw your face on the billboard?
Oh my God, it was cool as hell. It was so annoying because I was in America. So I really wanted to be there for it, because they took pictures of you like by it and everything. But so cool. Like, my ex's mum reached out to me and was like, gee, I saw you on a billboard. Aww. I'm so proud of you. But yeah, Samsung are just so creative with their ideas, and like they really know how to help with online interaction, you know, because that's done so well. Everyone looked at that and was like, what? Why are you on a billboard? So yeah, that was super, super cool.
I guess it's they could get a model in who nobody knows to do it.
Yeah,
or
right.
Or they could get someone who's got a following who's just having fun,
who just looks normal,
is just a normal person on a billboard.
Yeah, they do this a lot at the moment because I know Valkyrie done one for Gymshark in Times Square. I think Rambu had a Times Square one. Schlatt had a Times Square one with something. And obviously it just brings up so much interaction on Twitter and Instagram and whatnot because people are taking pictures of it, or like everyone are like, what the hell, why are these random Twitch streamers on billboards? It's such an easy marketing technique.
Yeah, well, it's obviously gone down well and everyone enjoys it.
Yeah,
I
think we had
CPK as well on, and he went on a billboard too. So everyone enjoys it a lot. So I have a question for you. So the question is about you having so many friends from all around the world. You mentioned being in America just then. How do you juggle having so many friends from all over the world?
That's so interesting. Like, because Freya always says to me, like, gee, he's got so many friends. I actually don't. Like, I think it looks like I do because I don't have any, like, enemies. I'm not someone that ever gets angry. I'm a crier. I'm not an angry person. So, like, you know, I don't have any enemies. But, like, I have, like, my best friends, which are Freya, Talia, Gigi, Kara, I'm like, am I forgetting anyone? And they're, like, my main, like, you know, like, core, like, girls.
You can go around the house easily as well.
Them, yeah. And, like, they're the people, I only speak to, like, them every day, only, and my mum. Like, so I don't actually have that many friends, you know? And then I've got like friends I consider my best friends, like Nikki, Andrea, Lexi, like, you know, like I've got a lot of like really good, I've got a really good circle of people. But I think that comes of age, I've realized, is that once you get older, you know, you realize who is there for you and who would like, you know, help you out when you're in need or whatever. But yeah, people always think I've got loads of friends, but I really don't. Like, in America, like, I see Andrea and Nikki and stuff. And then I've got other friends, like, Five Up's out there. I love Five Up. But yeah, I don't feel like I have to juggle friendships because I do make sure that I, like, reach out to people a lot, you know, and, like, make sure they're doing all right and everything. But I feel like if a friendship feels like a task or whatever, then it's not really a friendship. So yeah, I don't struggle with my friendships at all. My friendships are very...
Yeah, I guess you're friendly with a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've got the people who you're friends with. And I guess through those people you're close friends with that you mentioned there, if you go visit them and they're going to a party or something...
Exactly.
You go along and it looks like you're friends with everyone through social media or whatever.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. Like, a lot of people are, like, you know, just acquaintances and stuff. Like in Florida, I have, like, Sylvie, Hannah, that, like, I consider, like, best friends as well, but they're Florida, you know, and then people in LA, and then, you know, my friends here in London. So it does probably look like, like, Freya does always say, she's like, how do you, like, keep up with it? But it's not really keeping up with because, you know, when I'm in Florida and I'm really close, you know, we do all fun stuff there, but I don't ever expect them to constantly be talking to me because we're on such a time zone and everything. And like, I don't really expect anything from friendships these days because I've got like my core group of friends. So I don't really go out there searching for friendships. It just happens.
I guess you got your core group, and you've also, when we first met, you were taking quite a lot of steps for the self-love, self-care.
Yeah.
How's that going for you?
Going good. It's crazy. I used to really suffer with depression, like, really badly. And one of my main things was self-hatred. Like, that was the stem of my depression. I just focused on working on myself, like, the last, like, 2 years. And, yeah, I think this year I'll be self-harm and episode 3 for 3 years.
That's
which
amazing.
Is crazy. Because if you would have, I was suffering with that from like maybe 15 to 24, 25. So to think you know, like I put in the work, like the work to make my mind a little better. But yeah, it was just like kind of focusing on what was best for me, you know, whether that was like health wise, diet wise, social wise, work wise. But finding the balance is really tough, like really, really hard. But we got there. And one day I might drop down back down again, but that's okay, you know.
Yeah, I guess you've learned a lot through those last few years where you can help yourself a bit. You know who can help you as well.
Exactly, uh-huh. Oh my gosh, big time. Like, that's what I mean. Like, my core friends, I know that if I ever get bad again, because they stuck through me with the bad, like, especially Talia, Freya, Gigi, like, they were there when my mental health was bad, like really bad, and I was not a very nice person, like, because when your brain is so, you know, toxic towards yourself, it just comes out, you can't help it. But they were so understanding, and also in a way of like, I'll always say, like, I'm like, for Freya in particular, like, she was very honest with me when my mental health was bad, like, and when I was being toxic, because sometimes I'd be desperately like looking for like love or attention from someone, that I would just spiral, like, I don't know, it's hard to explain. But Freya would be very honest with me and be like, look, Georgina, you can't do that, like, you know, you need to figure out a different way to deal with this, you can't expect us to know how you're feeling and take it out on us. And I'll always be thankful for her for saying that, because it really did click in my mind. I was like, oh, I can't, like, it's not like Freya's and Talia's fault that, you know, I'm having a bad day and they can't be messaging me constantly, or, you know, because people can't do that. That's not life. But having that conversation with Freya really, like, I honestly think Freya was a big part of my journey over that one little thing, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really appreciated her honesty. Probably not at the time.
No.
Probably at the time I was like, oh God.
Yeah.
But yeah, now... yeah, hugely appreciated that from her.
Yeah, Freya's amazing. Mm-hmm. So the day I left Guild, she, at a whim, came to see me. Like,
yeah.
It was, she was out with Steph, I think, and she's like, oh yeah, we'll come out afterwards. And it was about an hour away. And then she came and visited me, and I went on a night out that night.
Oh.
And like, it's that kind of person you need in your life, isn't it? The person who there when you need them.
Yeah.
Will tell you, like,
how it
stop
is.
Being stupid.
Yeah.
You're fine. We're here for
exactly.
you. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So shout out to Freya.
Yeah.
What a
big
hero.
Up Freya. Love ya.
I guess going back to that then, do you mind talking about what you were like before you started to go through that transition, and what it was that sort of made you think about changing your life around then?
Yeah. So I was diagnosed with BPD, which is borderline personality disorder, just before lockdown. Before that, I was diagnosed with depression, actually psychotic depression. And yeah, when I was younger, I was very depressed, like, again, self-hatred, but I used to hallucinate a lot.
Okay.
Which was bad in your depressed days, because you'd hallucinate very bad things, horrible things. But in the good days, it was great. I'd sometimes hallucinate a cat or like these random sparkles, you know. But yeah, the bad days really did outweigh the good days back then. And yeah, I was just very sad. It's hard to explain, because I can't remember who I was talking to the other day, but when you're really mentally unwell and you're going through episodes, like, if you don't know what an episode is, or anyone out there, it's basically when you're kind of, you're such a different person because your mind is completely switched off. Like, you're so focused on the negative, and like, it's just, you are not there. Like, you are a complete different person. That's the best way for me to describe an episode. I'm sure everyone else would describe it differently. But yeah, when you go through those episodes, because they're so traumatizing, you like black out. Like, I try and think of like I can think of one episode, like where it started, where I was on a train, and like, I don't know where it came from, but my episode happened on a train, on public transport, and I had to get like pulled off the train by like the train staff. And from then on, the next 2 weeks, completely blank, like,
wow.
Blank. So yeah, when I used to deal with it back then, I used to just deal with it so badly. Like, I used to deal with it in a way of, I would expect people to kind of baby me in a way and be like, you know, just like let me be sad. And when I was sad, I would get kind of a thrill of being sad and negative. Like the more sad I could be, the more like that's where I wanted to be. I don't know. Brains are weird. Brains are really weird.
I completely get that.
Yeah.
I've had some tough times recently, you know, struggling with work and stuff like that. And I got quite sad to the point where I would release the sadness and like would almost hear people being like, oh, it's gonna get better. I'd be like, yeah, keep giving me that, keep fueling that sadness. Exactly. Make me feel worse, you know. Oh yeah, my life is bad right now. Keep telling me.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's the thing. I used to be like, I wanna just lay in my bed and I wanna like do this and like whatever and have a bad mental state, you know? I used to be like, the worse I am, the more like, you know, I don't know. It was just awful. But did
you find a particular end of the spectrum would snap you out of it? If it got really bad or if it started to get better, would you snap out of it?
It's so hard to describe because again, they're so blacked out for me, like so blacked out. Like I can't really remember what used to get me out of them. Again, I think a huge part of it was the friendship group I had. And it's Will as well. Incredible. Like I lived with him. Mm-hmm. So he saw some shit that no one should have seen. And like the fact he stood by me from that, like incredible. Like people, the thing with mental health is I think the thing that I wish I learned when I was younger, which again, this is for me personally, I wish I realized what effect it truly was having on people. Like my friends, my family, like Will, like, you know, I wish I saw that at the time because now like I look back at it and I'm like, no one should have had to have dealt with that, you know, like that was all me. But obviously at the time I was sad. I can't help what my brain's doing. But yeah, like for me personally, mentally, walking like helped me so much. So to this day now, like I know if I'm like, I'm like, I'm gonna go on a walk. But that is me personally, and I think that's because I love nature. Like, and when I was super depressed, like really like not wanting to like be present anymore, sunsets, because when I would look at something that was done by nature so beautifully, it would make me realize how lucky I am to be there looking at this beautiful multicolored sunset or like being out and hearing like birds chirping. So for me, that really helped.
I like running water.
Yeah, there you go. Like it's funny, isn't it? Like what our little like brains. I saw a thing the other day that was like, humans are so cute when they do these little things, but it's true. Like I don't know, just sunsets are so like, yeah, they really help me. And another thing that's super important to me and helped me to this day and I think will help everyone is gratitude, practicing gratitude. Oh my God. My mum used to say to me like, oh, like, because my mum has also like had a huge turnaround in her life, and she'd practice gratitude every morning, and I'd be like, okay, kind of, you know, whatever. But it is so important because when your mind is in such a different place, it's so important to bring yourself back. Like the thing is like snapping back, and that's so hard to do. But when you like sit there and like focus on like the little things, like I would focus on my soft blanket, like I'd have this one blanket that I would like wrap myself up in, and I would just sit there and be like, okay, I have my soft blanket, like, you know, I'm very fortunate to have this soft blanket, like I feel safe, I feel warm. And like other things like sunsets, for example, like I can see the sunset and I can experience it, and like little things like that, it's so powerful to your mind, like incredibly powerful. Even if you're not mentally unwell, like for me now, if I'm like kind of stressed about something, then I sit back and I'm like, okay, well, I'm grateful I have this opportunity in place, and I'm grateful that I can sit back and like have this time to like have a coffee. Do you know what I mean? Like just have a coffee and like So yeah, practicing gratitude is super, super, super powerful.
Yeah, that's one of the great things in religion, I think.
I am agnostic,
but when I look at religion, I take away the bits that I think are amazing. And prayer is a great example of
gratitude. Yeah.
And when I was at university, I was struggling with my mental health a little bit. And I researched happiness, classic scientific mind. And I looked up what were the proven ways to improve happiness. Yeah. And there were 5 things at the time. They probably found more now. Exercise, we all know that improves happiness. Meditation, I didn't really want to try it, but I was like, okay,
yeah,
I know
my mom
about
meditates
that.
Every morning.
Yeah, and meditation now is understood to be slightly more than just traditional meditation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, things like walking can be considered a form of meditation now.
Oh,
because you're in a thoughtless trance sometimes,
like flow state.
Flow state, yeah. And so you can kind of meditate walking, and so for some people, doing sport is meditation.
Like
you have your thing which is meditative for you.
Oh, interesting.
And then the other three, one of them was gratitude, as you mentioned. I think it was 3 gratitudes a day was proven to, and I remember off the back of that was the main one which I took away. I was like, I'm gonna keep doing that. And it was little stupid things, like I'd walk down the road and be like, do you know what, tarmac is great.
Yeah, I know, literally.
Who created a thing that's so smooth that lasts this long?
Yeah, it's so funny, the little things you're like, actually I'm really grateful for this. Yeah.
And then the other two was an act of selflessness. Whatever it is, holding a door open, you know, buying a coffee for someone, whatever it is. You know, you can take it however you want. And then the fifth one was keeping, like, it's not diary, but like keeping a log of things that you've done.
Interesting.
And if you do that daily, then it helps you to reflect on the previous day that you've done and the things that you've achieved throughout the day. So it's a good way to not feel like a day has been wasted. And get your thoughts together from what happened in the day. So those were the 5 things.
Yeah.
And I kept a log every day for a month and did all the other things.
Yeah.
And you know, even if you don't take all of them away, the gratitude one for me was the biggest one. Where I was like, actually, do you know what? Being grateful for things is massive. And you saying that's going to make me go away and be more grateful again.
You just have to get into like the remembering part, you know, because you can get so consumed on what's ever happening in your life. But yeah, if you take a second to like sit back and just be like, okay, I'm grateful for this and that and whatever. Or even just like day to day, like sometimes in the morning when I like make my like drink, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm starting off a day, but I'm grateful that I have my little drink that I'm happy with. And yeah, it's just a nice like way to start the day.
Yeah. And that's like with this whole podcast, I've changed my attitude towards it. At first, it was like, I must make this succeed. I must do this, must do that. And now I look back at it and I'm grateful for the 27 conversations I've had. I'm grateful for the opportunities it's provided for people.
Yeah.
Grateful for the things it's made me learn and all that kind of stuff. And that's a very privileged position to be in, to be able to say that. But that's where privilege, when it's grateful, can be turned into good. Whereas when privilege is taken with frustration and I want more, and that sort of narcissistic mindset towards privilege that you deserve and
spiral,
want more, then that's where it becomes quite bitter. And so I think that's the biggest thing I've learned from seeking happiness. I'm glad you found that same thing.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely a huge part like that helped me and helped my like mindset of things and everything, because everything is to do with the mind, you know. So once you really get control of like what works well for your mind, like it will do like better. But obviously everyone's different, so it's hard. I can only speak from my own experience.
I mean, go away, try some of the things you spoke about and see if it helps.
Because I learned it from my mom, and at the start I was like, all right, mom. But it does. It works.
Yeah, you're very close with your mum.
I am, yeah. She's somewhere around here. I don't know where she is, but yeah, I love my mum.
Tell me about your mum.
She's great and she's pretty, and my mum's incredible. She's gone through such a hard life. Like, I lost my dad at 3. So obviously she lost her husband with like a 3-year-old, which is really rough. We didn't get on much when I was younger, but I think that's what made us so close now, is because I watched her turn her life around. Like, she is my biggest inspiration, because me and her didn't speak for a few years, maybe. because we just didn't get on. And yeah, she put all her effort into just being a better person. And that's what I've inspired to do now. Like, she has inspired me in so many ways. And yeah, I'm just so like impressed by her, like the amount that she's done and like the hard work she's put into it and everything. Obviously, I won't speak about her story, as you know, if she ever wants to come on the podcast. But yeah, she is just so incredible. And like, I'm so close with her. Like, I just love her to bits. Like, absolutely adore her.
Yeah, going along to Elton John tonight with
yeah,
her.
Yeah, we are. We're going to Elton John yeah. tonight.
No, I'm very fortunate. My mum, very close with her. And it's almost, I feel like for me, I'm almost sometimes embarrassed to be that close to my mum. Aww. When actually, as I've got older, the whole gratitude thing, uh-huh. I've started to realize how lucky I am to have such an amazing relationship right. with my mum. And sometimes I should do more for it. Because yeah. I think it's very easy to say that now while, mm-hmm. you know, I get a lot and she might not get as much back. But yeah. like, when you, especially when you live away from your family, like what you're doing tonight, going to see Elton John together. Yeah, you know, yeah. I went to see Happy Hour Live with my mum.
Oh, sweet.
And like, so that they obviously made a joke about the fact I was there with my mum. Yeah. But in a weird way, I was there like, yeah, I am here with my mum.
Yeah,
mom,
proud of know? It. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I think that kind of relationship, I think it's something, especially now with the way the world works, like people of our generation just want to escape their family
yeah.
As soon as possible. But I think you, and in particular, some of those close friends you mentioned, mm-hmm. they've got amazing relationships with their family. And I think that's some of the most impressive qualities
yeah.
of your like you, Talia, Freya, are all so close with the families. Mm-hmm. I think that's such a beautiful thing. Like the fact that you brought your family along to your birthday that we mentioned yeah. earlier on. Like most people wouldn't do that, but yeah. it's such an amazing connection that you have.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm super blessed with my family. But also like to go off of that, I think it's important as well if someone isn't. Like, or if you have a bad family or a bad parents and stuff, it is okay to take yourself away from that, because that's what I done. Like, me and my mum did not get on. It was not good. So I removed myself from the situation. I'm like went and lived with different family members. Then I moved into London and I removed myself because I couldn't, you know, it wasn't good for my mum or for me. So I think it's really important as well to like, you know, if your family is not good for you, then it's okay to remove yourself from that. Like, you should not have to take negativity from someone or you know, have a like negative impact on your life just because they're family.
Yeah,
so I think that's really important to
people
say as
always
well.
Say unconditionally you must love your family.
No, hell no. There yeah. are some nasty people out there in the world. Nasty nasty people. And like, yeah, I've heard some awful stories of in families and everything. And if, you know, people can change and you know, if people put the work in and everything, then sure, like you can let them back in or whatever. But yeah, I'm very very blessed with my family. Super super blessed with my family. Like everyone in my family just treats me so well. Like my two cousins are like my brother and sister, because I never had any siblings when I grew up. And yeah, they just all look after me very very well.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
We're coming close to the end here. I don't want to keep you all night because you've got right. you got concerts
go
to go
Elton
to.
John. Elton John's waiting for me.
Elton John is waiting. I guess one question I wanted to ask today, because I feel like you've got such a long story and there might be bits of it that you wanted to talk about. What's the one thing I should have asked you for this podcast that
Ooh.
I haven't?
Oh my gosh. I don't know. I'm so bad at on the spot things.
Is there a part of your journey or a part of yourself that we haven't spoken about that you wanted to speak about?
Maybe like my editing more, because that was such a huge part of my life. Like that was 4 years straight of my life working. It was a full-time job, like full-time, full-time. But yeah, like the transition from working for the Sidemen Boys to like Will was a big change, because the videos were so different. Because with the Sidemen Boys, I was working on gaming videos, and then when I worked for Will, it was like main channel videos, which was a whole different world to me. But yeah, like I'm just really thankful of those boys putting a lot of trust with me. And I can't lie, at the end of editing, because I was so focused on streaming, I lost such a passion for editing that I wasn't performing as well as I used to be with editing, because with editing it's always evolving. Like, I edited a YouTube video recently for someone I can't say, but I edited a video for them and I was like, I don't know editing styles anymore. Like, my editing style is literally 2016. So like, I edited these things, I was like, that's not what I had to re-edit it.
It's so fast now, isn't
it? It's so fast paced. Yeah. So yeah, like, but that's, you know, I could go on and on and on about that. Like, yeah, it was a very, very big part of my life.
Yeah, I think editing is something that's so underappreciated. I think something that's well edited, like looking even in the movie industry.
Yeah.
I've heard stories about, you know, Star Wars is one of the biggest franchises in the world, and it would not have worked if it wasn't for the wife of the director or something who edited it. I can't remember who it was.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
She took on editing and then absolutely smashed it. And it's such a convoluted story with multiple stories going on at once. The way it's edited together is what makes it so special.
Yeah. And yeah, like the editing is a huge part.
The music in and out to kind of set new scenes and that kind of thing. And I think that's such a key now. Like, we had Danny on in the last episode talking about the creativity that is sometimes lacking within our industry because people aren't knowledgeable, they aren't experienced. A lot of them are self-taught.
Yeah.
And there's such a deep understanding that needs to be there to be a good editor.
Yeah, for sure.
And I guess you are one of those people who went through the training. You had a job in a big firm and learned a lot there. And so you have all that experience. And even then you feel like there's so much still to learn.
Oh my God, for sure. Yeah. I think it's just something that's always going to be evolving. And like, when I first started working for Sidemen, well, when I was working for them for like 2 years, I was like, oh, I want to set up like a little company and train people to be YouTube editors, because it was such a thing that, like, even to this day, like, I get people, huge, like 10 million subscriber YouTubers come to me and be like, gee, can you find me an editor? Like, I need an editor. And it's so hard to find an editor. Mm-hmm. Like, to this day, like, we've put people on trial. Like, it's just so difficult to, because YouTube is so personal, people don't want them to edit their videos if they don't know them or if they don't trust them. Or there's like certain things, they need to be specialized in this, or they need to know how to do the text like this or pick up on this humor. And it's such a different world. Like, you can't really train it. So I'm always like kind of gutted I never done that, because I feel like it would have really been like good to have helped people learn about YouTube editing, because you don't learn that in any course or anything like that. But yeah, it's a bit late now. Yeah. I don't even know. I need to be taught about editing now.
Maybe you can find someone else doing that.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, I mean, I got quite lucky for my Rocket League content. I got an editor in for that. And I was lucky that someone who was older, more mature, smart, he was an amazing editor. And I was like, oh, we're going to trial. Here's the video. Edit this.
Yeah.
Came back and went in game, did some like cinematic shots of the gameplay. And I was like, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he was like, so sure when I said to him to do a trial. I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do that. I don't have the time to do a trial if I'm not going to get it. Did the trial. I was like, you should not have worried. You are by far the best editor I've ever seen. And it's like, sometimes you just find those people, right?
Yeah, uh-huh. And it's just the right person. Like,
most of the time, that's how editors are found in YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's always a random way editors are found.
At a party.
At a party, yeah, for example.
Well, I think we're going to round it up here. Gee, it's been amazing having you on.
Thank you.
Thank you for being so open about some of the challenges you faced and your whole journey and everything. I think some of the things you mentioned, there might be someone out there who that's really important to them. We barely even scratched MCC.
Yeah, I know.
Love to chat about MCC. I guess we'll quickly...
Round like, two.
little like 2 minutes on MCC before we wrap it up here.
Yep.
What's MCC been like for you?
Incredible. I love it. Like, I didn't realize how big the community is, like the statistics and everything people break down. Mm-hmm. But I love learning and I love like trying to do something new. And yeah, MCC was just something like that for me. Like, Scott was like to me, Georgina, you better stop getting better, because otherwise it's going to be hard to put you on teams. Because they brought me in as a kind of a fill, you know, to balance out teams. Because I was very new to Minecraft when it was happening. I'd known Scott again for like, I met him at the same Insomnia I met CPK at. So like 5 years ago. And I was on the waiting list for MCC for like maybe a year and a half. And when I don't think anymore, but yeah, I know for sure not anymore. But when they did announce me, I had the worst feedback, like the worst, like, quote retweets or whatever, being like, why is she in MCC? Because it was after my birthday party as well. People were not happy with it. But yeah, I've loved it. Like, the community are really lovely to me. And like, I love constructive criticism. I love people actually being like, actually, you could have done this better. Like, because it makes me learn and it makes me do better. And the MCC community definitely do that. And I appreciate it. But yeah, it's really fun. I love it.
And the team of four is great for you. Being able to bring everyone up, keep everyone motivated. Probably the best cheerleader.
Yeah. Scott was like, you're one of the easiest people to place on teams because you can, you know, get on with whoever, even if it's someone I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I love like that. Like, it's like made me meet so many people. And being in an MCC team, like, you know, it's so niche to be like playing all these Minecraft games. Whenever people ask me, they're like, what do you do at the moment, Regina? I'm like, I play Minecraft competitively. You're, and they're like, MCC. Wow. Yeah, I'm like, little do they know I'm the worst player. But yeah, it's a really, really cool like thing, and I hope I'm a part of it for a long, long time.
You said I'm the worst player. When we met up when you were about to do your first MCC, and you were telling me how much you were training because you wanted to make sure you weren't the worst player.
Spreadsheets for days.
You were training hard. Did that all come to fruition? Did you, because you're not bottom ranked player ever, right?
I'm not. Yeah, I have. I don't know if I've been 40th ever, but I definitely
I think 37th was your lowest. I checked your stats.
Oh, did you? Okay, well, there you go.
I might be wrong now. That's embarrassing.
Last MCC of the one before that, I think I placed 23rd, which is mental. Like, I'm meant to be a top 10.
Last two you've done quite well as well. Yeah. Like, your first one you did really well, and then you sort of had a bit of a lull in the middle, and then you come back up again.
Yeah. Like, whenever I speak to like the boys that play in it, they're like, geez, like the worst player you could have on your, like the best worst player you could have on your team because I try. Mm. And people say that my communication skill is good. That's what the Reddit says. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
I've been told.
Yeah, I've been told by the Redditors. But yeah, I love it. I love the community. I love the like the people that play in it, the whole it's so great, it's so good.
Yeah, well, we've had Smager and CPK on, and they love it as well, obviously. They're very into it. Hopefully we'll get someone from the Nox crew on soon.
Yeah, I know, that'd be cool.
Back end of it. But I think that's what we've got time for. We'll go with the final question. I've already done saying how great you are. And the final question we ask everyone is, what does gaming mean to you?
Ooh, gaming means to me, I don't know. The thing I want to say is memories. I don't know. Just because, like, gaming has such a big part in my life, even from when I was younger with Habbo Hotel, and like playing Animal Crossing on the DS, like, and playing it with my cousin, like, at Christmas, she'd come over and we'd visit each other's islands, and the Among Us days. Like, it's such big parts of my life. So I would say, like, the special little memories it has is what it means to me.
Amazing. Well, thank you, G.
Thank you, Kraken. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.